Okay.
Moving along. So last week we discussed the concept of a sota, the woman who is accused of adultery. And this week we're discussing the next mitzvah of the Torah, which involves the procedures which surround a nazir. A nazir will explain exactly who a nazir is, what he represents, why one will become a nazir. But a nazir essentially is a form of a neder, of a vow, which commits you to a certain group of restrictions. So, I mean, really in the Torah, one can take vows and restrict themselves. I can take a vow that I'm not going to eat chocolate, and I'm actually bound by the Torah and I'm not to eat chocolate. If I eat chocolate, I violate the Torah at that point. So that's usually how a vow works. A nazir is a very specific formation of a vow, which, you know, as soon as you say, I will be a nazir, you're now bound by a lot of specific rules and regulations, and you can't remove those restrictions until you go through a certain procedure. So a nazir can apply to both men and women. A woman can also become a nazira, we call it. She can apply, women can become a nazir as well. And the idea of a nazir, there's three main restrictions for a nazir. The first restriction is that he or she is not allowed to drink wine or eat any grape products, including raisins, including vinegar, including even the peels of grapes. No grape product or wine can be consumed. That's number one. Number two, they're not allowed to have a haircut. And number three, they cannot become tameh, impure, from a dead body. So a person can enter a cemetery, use a nazir, cannot be involved in chevra kadisha, cannot. The only time you could, if there's a mes mitzvah, if there's someone passed away and no one else there to take care of that person, then the nazir would be allowed to take care of that person. But beyond that, a nazir is never allowed to become impure, tameh, by means of a dead body. It's actually more strict than a kohen. A kohen is allowed to become tameh for his immediate relatives. Father, mother, sister, brother, or son, or daughter, or wife. But a nazir can't become tameh for anybody, even for a meat relative, besides this situation of meis mitzvah, that person who has no one else to take care of his body. The standard term of a nazir is 30 days. One can extend the term. If you say, I'm going to be a nazir for 10 years, you could do that too. You can't do less than 30 days. So, but 30 days is the minimum and the standard. So if someone just says, I'm going to be a nazir, that means he's committing to 30 days of nazirus. That's what it means. If a nazir becomes impure, he has to restart his count. So assuming it's a 30-day period, if on day 28 he becomes impure from a dead body, he has to restart the count again. After he goes through a certain process, he'll start over again. If the person had committed to be a nazir for 25 years, on year number 24 he becomes impure, he has to restart the count. So you got to be very careful if you're a nazir that you don't become impure, or else you're going to be stuck. If the nazir cuts his or her hair, which again is prohibited, if he does that, then you don't have to restart the count. We have to wait 30 more days. So again, the typical term is 30 days, so it's essentially like restarting your count. But if you were committing for 25 years, and you cut your hair, right before your last day, then you still have to wait another 30 days until you finish your process. So the difference between cutting hair versus becoming impure is impure restarts the count totally, and cutting hair just makes you count an additional 30 days. The idea being he has to end his term at least with a 30-day hair growth. That's the idea. It has to be his 30 days of hair grown on his head to end his term of being a nazir. If he eats grape products or wine, it's prohibited, but it doesn't impact the count of days. So that one, so if he has a cup of wine on his very last day, he's violated the Torah, but yeah, it doesn't impact his term of nazirus in any way.
That's it.
He's just a violation, yeah. But he continues on as usual, nothing changes. Right. I mean, if he's worn, doesn't have purpose, he can get lashes in a beis din. It's like any other violation of the Torah, we treat it that way.
So for one, there's no additional time, it's just
he's violated the Torah, and he's subject to those punishments like any other standard violation of the Torah. Yeah, so it's interesting. So in these three categories, each one impacts the count differently. If he becomes impure, he has to restart totally. If he cuts his hair, he has to keep additional 30 days. And if he eats grape products, then it's just in violation of the rules, but that's about it. How do you end the process of being a nazir? So after the count, whatever the count may be, after the count is over, so this whole procedure that one has to go through, you bring three offerings to the temple. One of them would be an ola, an offering which is totally burnt up on the altar. One is a chatas, a sin offering. And then one is a shlamim, which is the peace offering, or the complete offering. The one which, you get to eat part of it, and it's the kohen eats part of it. It's the universal offering for everybody to enjoy. along with these offerings, he also would bring some flower offerings as well. The first he'll bring the sin offering, and then the ola, the burnt offering, and then the shalom, and then the peace offering. After all these offerings are brought, he's allowed to cut his hair. The hair is then thrown, ideally, under the pot in which the offering is being cooked. I mean, there'll be a part of the offering he'll be eating. He'll be cooking it in a pot, and you throw the hair to be burnt under that pot. The hair is actually cut in the outer courtyard of the temple itself, is where he has his hair cut. The Kohen will then take one of the pieces of the ram. The ram was one being bought as the shlomim, as the peace offering. He'll take a portion of that ram, he'll put it in the hands of the nazir, he's going to wave his hands, similar to what you leave a lulav, you know, back and forth, up and down, etc. And once he's gone through that process, he's allowed now to go ahead and have wine, become impure, he's back to being a normal everyday citizen. Yeah. We'll talk about that. I just want to go through the procedure first, and we'll talk about the ideas.
And Rabbi has said it's the same for a man or a woman.
Yeah, same for a woman. Right. Right. So that's the in short, the procedure of a nazir. That's the prohibitions, and that is the process of how to become how to complete the process. Now the question is, why would one become a nazir? That's a good question. What's the goal? What's the significance of these three prohibitions? How do they kind of work together? Like, why is this like the list of things that a nazir can't do? Also, we can ask, well, if the answer to this is well, a nazir at the end has to bring a sin offering. Well, but why did he sin? What's wrong? If you're a nazir and you completed the process appropriately, why is it considered a sin? Why is it a sin offering at the end? So let's take it slowly and we'll discuss the concept here. Now we know the procedure, we can discuss what the concept is, what's the goal, what's one trying to achieve in becoming a nazir. So number one, what does the word nazir itself mean? Right, the Torah calls this person a nazir. The Rashi, in the Chumash, when it says the word nazir, Rashi explains that it means, it's a term meaning prisha, meaning like abstinence, to abstain, to hold back from enjoying this world. Somebody kind of sets himself apart. And very often in the Torah, and Rashi sees the term kedusha, sanctity, holiness. So Rashi describes that as being somebody who is parush, same word, somebody who is kind of abstains from the physical world. It's actually last week, Judy asked me, so here this week, she asked me, what's the difference between holiness and righteousness? So I answered her based on Rashi. Holiness means that you kind of set yourself apart, that you don't jump into all the pleasures of the world. Righteousness is doing the right things, is doing what's right. Holiness is more of like an attitude in life that I kind of live a more elevated lifestyle and I don't jump into every single physical pleasure around me. And righteousness, what we call tzedek in Hebrew, that's more that I do the right things. I follow the rules and do the right things. So nazir is somebody who's considered kadosh, he's considered holy, and he's considered parush, he's considered that he abstains, that he's removed from the physicality of everyday life. A person, very often in this world can become very involved and entrenched in the physical world, and a nazir is someone who should be striving to lift himself above that. He's trying to lift himself out of the draws of daily life, out of the physical draws of daily life, and become a more elevated, higher person. So ideally, the goal of the nazir is to be this elevated person, that he sees the challenges before him, he sees the challenges of the physical world, and he wants to take action to elevate himself. So he says, that I see that I'm very involved in materialism, I'm very involved in physicality, I'm very involved in the world of lust, I'm very involved in the world of food. He says, I want to be able to train myself to be more elevated. So he'll take on this concrete action, becoming a nazir, in order to lift himself out of the world. So we'll talk about the specifics, but I think there's an important lesson there in general, is that often we all find our challenges in life. And we say we want to change, we want to do what's better, we want to do better. We'll do what we can. But a nazir is somebody who commits to a concrete action, and he obligates himself in it. Then just say, I'm going to be a more elevated, better person. He says, I'm going to take this commitment the Torah prescribes and commit myself to it in a way which I'm obligated to make sure I elevate myself. And it's the idea of taking a concrete action to change in life. No matter what area of life we're trying to improve in, as we become better people, just trying to say I'm going to do better doesn't always do the trick, because I want to do better, but I don't do better. But if we try to prescribe for ourselves some strong commitments or concrete actions, it's much more doable. People talk about New Year's resolutions, things like that, which is always the subject of many, many jokes that are out there. But the idea of a resolution isn't just, I'm going to talk about it. You have to make some sort of concrete step that you're going to do it. Right? So you have to make some sort of commitment for yourself so you keep that resolution. And that's the idea of a nazir. Nazir is not just saying, I want to be a better person, I want to be more elevated. He's actually committing himself in ways the Torah obligates him to be more elevated. The Torah refers to the nazir. It says that he's doing it lehazir l'Hashem. He wants to separate himself for the sake of Hashem. It says, nazir elokav al rosho. So the term nazir elokav, nazir is related to nazir, but it's translated as the kind of the crown of God is upon his head. And once someone becomes a nazir, it's as if they're wearing the crown of God. And somebody who's supposed to be kind of removed and elevated from this world, it's considered an act of holiness, a sanctity, a crowning act for a person. A person becomes a very elevated, sacred person for that term of being a nazir. When it says that he has the crown of God upon his head, so the Ibn Ezra, one of the classic commentators in the Torah, he writes that who wears a crown? A king wears a crown. And a true king is somebody who's able to free himself or herself from the passions and lusts of the physical world. So it's somebody who has self-control. Somebody who has that willpower and that self-control. That's a true king or queen in this world. That's the name that we say, who's the gibor? Who's the true hero? Who's the true strong warrior? It's the one who's kovash tisra, the one who's able to overcome their own passions and their own drives. So the nazir who's supposed to be fighting against his own urges and drives, he's considered, he has a crowning achievement. He has a crown on his head because he's become a true king because he's overcoming his drives. A person who's referred to in the Torah, he wasn't literally a nazir, but Joseph is referred to as a nazir. When Yaakov gives him his blessing at the end of his life, he calls him Nazir Echav, the nazir of the brothers. And many commentators point out, because Yosef, somebody who had to struggle with a great challenge of physical passion, when Ishus Potiphar tried to seduce him, the wife of Potiphar tried to seduce him when he was a servant in Potiphar's household, and he controlled himself. And that was an achievement tantamount to a nazir, in that he was able to control his physical drives and kind of be above this world. He's referred to as the nazir amongst the brothers. Of all the brothers, he was presented with that challenge, and he overcame that challenge. So the idea of a nazir is somebody who's acting for the sake of God, to become more sacred and elevated, and wear this crown on his head, to wear the crown of somebody who kind of, you know, sits above all the challenges of this world. The Torah presents the discussion of nazir immediately following Sota. Last week we discussed the Sota, this woman who's accused of adultery. And the rabbis say, why is it that the discussion of Nazir immediately follows the discussion of Sota in the Torah? And the sages teach us it's because somebody who sees how low a person in this world can sink, the Sota who cheated on her husband, and you know what happens, what we discussed last week, if she's accused and discovered, she goes through this gruesome process, being checked out in the temple and essentially, you know, swelling to death. But when somebody sees how low a person can sink in the world of passion and physical desires and lusts, so they should be driven at that point to want to separate from it. And that should then lead you to becoming a nazir. So it says, if you see the sota in her, you know, in her kyokula, you know, in her destructive state, in the state of lowliness, at that point you should become a nazir. It would be a logical step to take when you see how far and how lowly a person can become based on their physical lusts and desires. However, separating from physical desires, in a certain sense, we view as, you know, a superhuman achievement. It's very difficult. I mean, we're humans, and our bodies, you know, live on the physical, and we need it, and we have drives, we need to eat, and we have physical desires. The Torah says, when it describes the nazir, the wording used is, where did I find it here? Sorry. The wording used is, ki yafli lindorneter nazir. A person is, the word used is yafli. So the word yafli literally would mean kind of to make an expression. They express a vow of becoming a nazir. But the term, the same exact term, can mean something which is miraculous or wondrous. It's pella, something which is wondrous. And the commentaries point out that it actually is a wondrous thing for a person to want to become elevated above this world, because the whole world is drawn after the physical and drawn after the material. And for someone to take that step and say, well, I want to become different, I want to become more elevated, they're performing a superhuman act, a miraculous act in some sense. So that's why the Torah describes the nazir as somebody who does something which is a pele, which is a wonder. It's wondrous. It's something which the Torah prescribes that we need to work towards, but it's a wondrous act to be able to perform such a thing. This is Ibn Ezra writes, that most of the world is running after their desires, and the nazir stops himself and says, I want to become higher than that. I want to go above that. So it's a pele, it's a wonder you can do such a thing. Now, we describe him as being such a high and holy person. But you look at the list of prohibitions, it doesn't seem such a hard thing to do. It's not like he has to fast like every single day and like never touch a piece of meat, never eat candy. He has to just abstain from grape products and cutting his hair and becoming impure. It's just those three things. That sounds so challenging. I mean, we might enjoy wine or it's nice to get a haircut once in a while, but, you know, what's the big challenge of the Nazir that he has to abstain just from these things? Like, what's the big deal? We're painting him as this really extremely high, holy person who escapes from the physical world and lives beyond all the physical lust and desires around him. Right, it's only 30 days. I'm sure we've probably times in our own lives we've gone 30 days without having a grape, you know? So maybe we have some Shabbos wine, you know, every Friday for Kiddush. So you listen to someone else's Kiddush, you don't need to drink the wine. What's the big deal? So the Sephorno writes that to totally abstain from all physical pursuits and desires and afflict ourselves and deprive ourselves, that's not really a Jewish value. Why? Because that will detract from our ability to serve God, not add to it. I mean, the goal is, how do we serve the God with the best strength, the best focus, the best ability? So to totally abstain and totally deprive ourselves, this self-deprecation and deprivation, is something which will sap our strength, will put us down, and it won't allow us to appreciate the world and serve God in the proper way. But he says that small gestures help a person to boost their spiritual drives, boost their willpower, boost their self-control, and weakens their drives towards the physical. So he says that small steps, so even though it's a statement, I'm not going to touch wine or grape products for a month. And when you're sitting down for your Shabbos meal and your friends are all enjoying a nice cup of wine, you say, I can't have that, I'm sorry. And when it's a hot day out and everyone's enjoying these nice, fresh, juicy grapes, you say, I can't have any. So it's a statement you're making to yourself. Even though it's a small gesture, it's not like this major self-sacrifice that I can't have wine. But what you're doing is you're training yourself to have willpower, to have self-control, to be able to hold yourself back. And these small steps of training with the proper, if the goal is that I'm training myself to be in control of my desires, so that's the process. And like we mentioned before, if you try to, you're trying to build up your muscles. So if you immediately jump to the heaviest weight, you're not going to be able to lift it up or you're going to tear your muscle. If you do a little bit at a time, that's how you build your muscles. When someone gets braces, they don't just knock it with a hammer. You have to have slow, steady pressure in order to straighten your teeth. If they knock with a hammer, the tooth will fall out. So too, when a person is trying to become a better person, it's the slow, gradual gestures and steps we make, which are training exercises, which help us grow. So that's how the Sephorno explains it. That the Nazir, even though what he's doing seems to be something which is small, but his goals are very, very lofty goals, and he's able to train himself in abstention and in having willpower and self-control and not sap his strength and depress himself from serving God. That's what the Sephorno describes. The really small constant acts are the way to train ourselves. The radical, drastic, you know, huge moves aren't going to bring us, it'll just suck the life out of us, but it won't bring us where we need to go. That's what he explains. Additionally, the Evan Ezra, he writes that the idea of abstaining from wine is that we know that wine, I mean alcohol in general, and wine in particular, is something which impacts our minds, our intellect. Service of God, Evan Ezra writes, has to be totally filled with intellectual involvement and focus. We have to be totally, you know, focused and understand what we're doing. And when we drink wine, it impairs that. So the Nazir is trying to become a more focused servant of God. He abstains from wine to make sure that his mind is totally focused for that month. There's not going to be any sort of lapse of focus during this month when he's a Nazir. The idea of not cutting hair, so again, back to the commentary of the Sforno, he writes that hair represents materialism, meaning a focus on our appearance, a focus on our external looks. And he says if the Nazir is trying to rise above this materialistic world, so not cutting hair, being a little bit more disheveled, being a little bit more, he's not focused on his outward appearance, that focuses more on his inward appearance, you know, on who he is, on what his real goals in life are. It's a lack of focus on the physical, it's to focus more on the spiritual. So that's what represented by hair. And then similar to what we said before, the Abarbanel writes that the hair in our head also can be symbolic of our minds. I mean, it's something which surrounds our head, which contains our brains. And just like we said, the drinking wine impairs our ability to focus. So not cutting our hair is symbolic of the fact that our minds should never be turned off. Cutting hair is as if, you know, I guess symbolic of cutting away a piece of the mind, at least temporarily. And, you know, when the Nazir does not cut his hair, he's symbolically saying that my mind is going to be totally focused during this month. That's what the Abarbanel writes. So we see these two themes running through, at least both these prohibitions. The theme of total intellectual focus and never turning off your mind or impairing it in any way, and the theme of trying to rise above the material world, but yet with small, steady gestures, not with these major acts. The one more point made by Rabbeinu Bechai, another classic commentator, he writes that having unkempt hair, it humbles a person. It creates, the way I understand what he means, is that kind of it creates a lack of self-confidence, of self-image. So when it humbles you, if you're not walking around with that same confidence, that same arrogance you might have when you look put together, so that humbles you and focuses you towards greater powers, which is God. So it helps us to zap out of the person points of arrogance which are within. So the idea of not cutting the hair. Again, we don't make him walk around in dirty clothing and with patches and, you know, and torn pants and, you know, but at least, you know, there's that small gesture that I'm going to walk around a little bit unkempt, not looking my best, and that should put me in my place to some degree. That's what Ibn Bechai is pointing out. And even at the very end of the process, it's not like he gets a nice haircut at the end. So he goes through the whole process, and he goes to the temple, and they say, okay, now it's time for your haircut. So they don't call in the barber, okay, give him a nice haircut. They shave it all off. That's what the Torah says. You shave everything, all the entire head is shaved off. And the idea is that even when he's done with the process, he still should maintain these feelings of humility, and he's still shunning his external appearance. Eventually it grows back. But at least we don't just say, okay, process is over, now you can look your best once again, and you can start focusing on the externals. It's a gradual process, because we want him to focus on all the accomplishments he made as a Nazir. So we don't want him to come back with this like stunning haircut. You know, maybe you'll become a Nazir just to get the base of Mikdash barber to cut your hair, because it'll be so good. They say that the Gemara talks about how the Kohen Gadol had a very unique haircut. It was actually, I forgot the name of the person, there was a special barber who gave Kohen Gadol a haircut. It was a very unique, you know, nice haircut. So you might want to use that barber to the base of Mikdash. Say, I want to be a Nazir just so he can cut my hair. So the answer is no, you got to shave it all off. You shave off all the hair at the end, and you're still trying to express the idea that I shun my external appearance to focus on my internal connection with God. Now, the third category you have to abstain from is becoming impure, becoming tamei by means of a dead body. So what does this symbolize? So it's very similar to the Kohen Gadol. A regular Kohen, we said, is allowed to become impure to immediate relative. The Kohen Gadol, the high priest, he cannot become impure for anybody. Again, besides that mitzvah, that person who has no one else to care for his body. But that aside, the Kohen Gadol is not allowed to become impure for any purpose when it comes to a dead body. And the idea is that impurity, despite the fact that taking care of a deceased person is a mitzvah, impurity still does have a negative spiritual impact upon a person. So for a normal, everyday Jew, it's not an issue. And you know, it's a mitzvah to be involved in taking care of a dead body. And one of the greatest things a person could do is be part of the Chevra Kadisha. But somebody like the Kohen Gadol, or a Nazir, who's supposed to be somebody totally devoted to spiritual goals and kind of removed from our world. So for those people, it's considered inappropriate to involve themselves with the act of caring for a dead body, with impurity that comes from those actions. So he's on a level like the Kohen Gadol. That's the goal. He's supposed to become somebody who's on a level just the Kohen Gadol was supposed to be. The Kohen Gadol, despite the fact that we did have some corrupt Kohen Gadols out there, the idea of the Kohen Gadol is supposed to be that, you know, the highest spiritual figure in the Jewish people. He's supposed to be our model. He's supposed to be our paradigm. And at times he was. At times, unfortunately, he wasn't. But at least ideally, that's what the job is supposed to entail. So the Nazir is supposed to be somebody who can reach that level, just like the Kohen Gadol. Now, at the very end of the process, it says that he brings, why does he bring a sin offering? Right? We understand he might bring some offerings. You know, if someone is trying to achieve spiritual goals, so to bring offerings at the end might be a logical conclusion to the process. But why a sin offering? So there's two different points which are made, somewhat opposite points, but they both have a good message to them. The first point, I'll quote, is from the Ramban, Nachmanides. He writes that the sin offering is due to the fact that he stopped his elevated status. He was somebody who just spent at least a month, or maybe even more, you know, on a level which we hope was a very spiritual high level. Somebody who symbolically and physically abstained from the world, from materialism, from the physical. And the fact he's now opting out and saying, I want to go back to normal everyday civilian life. So that itself is a sin offering. That decision that I'm going, there actually were people who were Nazirs for their entire lives. The most famous one was the judge Shimshon Samson. He was somebody who was a nazir his entire life. But there are people even who he was committed from birth by the angel and by his mother. But there were people that are discussed who did commit to becoming nazirim for their entire lives. Even this very day, it's interesting. If one becomes a nazir today, you can never get out of it. Since there's no temple, you can't bring the prescribed sacrifices and you're stuck. But there are records of people who, after destruction, have committed to nazirus. Even in recent generations, there are very, very few, very rare individuals. But these commitments have been made, and they go on forever. They go on to the day of death. Right? There's a famous one, I think, maybe 50 years ago or something. Past century in Yerushalayim, there was a famous nazir. But once you commit, you're committed for life until we rebuild the temple. That's there. But so the Nachmanides says that the sin offering is due to the fact that you are now opting to return back to regular everyday life and no longer carry on the practice of being a nazir. Now the opposite reason is given by the Sefer HaChinuch. The Sefer HaChinuch writes that essentially abstaining from this world itself was sinful. It's an interesting thing. It's like we said, like we mentioned before, it's not a Jewish ideal to abstain. The idea of being, asceticism and separating yourself from physical pleasures and from food, it's not a Jewish goal. God wants us to be part of the world. Jews are supposed to enjoy the world, enjoy their food, live marital life, enjoy it. God gave us a beautiful world, we're supposed to enjoy it. We're supposed to enjoy it with the goals of connecting with God and appreciating God, God's kindness and God's greatness. But we're not supposed to abstain from it. On Jewish holidays, the focus is on the meals, as we all know. Shabbos doesn't focus on enjoying the Shabbos meals. In the temple, they ate the offerings. They ate. They ate meats. They ate good meat. And they ate bread. And the temple offerings were, the Kohanim ate most of it. A lot of the Jews ate a lot of it. It was surrounding physical enjoyment and physical pleasure. Now, the physical pleasure shouldn't take on its own, as it becomes its own goal. The goal should be, I do this in order to connect with God and God's kindness. But the Sefer HaChinuch writes, God wants us to be part of the world. He gave us the world for a reason. He wants us to care for our bodies. He doesn't want us to deprive ourselves. Everything within moderation and self-control and with the proper balance. But even becoming a nazir could be that it was too much deprivation for a person. And you have to bring a sin offering afterwards because you deprived your body of God's kindness and of God's gifts. So sometimes someone's not able to enjoy these gifts. That's one thing. But to commit to the fact, I'm not going to enjoy God's gifts for the next month. So even though at times it might be called for, it was a sinful behavior according to the Sefer HaChinuch, therefore inappropriate to do. So it's a very important attitude that one has to take, which is that we have to develop the proper attitude towards the physical. There's a balance which has to be there. But ultimately God wants us to enjoy His world, care for our bodies. It can't become our focus and our goal, but yet it's supposed to be something which is part of life and enjoyed through life. I want to read to you an interesting quote. From the Kuzari. The Kuzari was a book written by Rabbi Yehuda Halevi. It's one of the classic philosophical works. It's not a factual account, but it's based on a historical account. It's written as a conversation between a king of the people called the Khuzars, who was searching for religion, searching for truth. And the book begins, he speaks to a Muslim authority, a Christian authority, and finally gets to the rabbi. And the rest of the book is the conversation between this king and the rabbi. And basically they're approaching a lot of, deep philosophical ideas, questions he has about Judaism. I mean, it's a fascinating work. It's something which is based on a real historical episode. There was a nation called the Khuzars. There is a record that they actually did convert to Judaism based on their king's interaction with the rabbi. And there are some Jews today who might trace themselves back to this nation. You can read about it. It's a very interesting account. It's based on a historical account, but yet the book is not a historical book. The book is written, it was just a means to write an interesting book, is why he did it that way. But perhaps a very interesting book because you have this dialogue between the king and the rabbi. But the king here, so he's speaking to the rabbi, and he says to him that he constantly praises the rabbi and he's saying very interesting things. And then he asks him questions. He challenges him. So he says, how come amongst the Jewish people we don't see more people who are, isolating themselves and depriving themselves of the physical? I mean, many religions out there, it's considered a spiritual goal that you should become, go off in a cave and meditate and not eat anything and, poke yourself with thorns. And especially, I guess, in Eastern religions, you find these types of things. But priests don't get married, and, you know, in Catholicism also you find such concepts. So he says, how come the Jews don't have these types of people? Why is it that the Jews seem to be so involved in physical enjoyment? It doesn't make sense. You're telling me it's the spiritual people, where is it? That was the question that the king asked to the rabbi. So the rabbi tells him, he says that the way you connect with God is not as you think. He says the way you connect with God is purely through following God's will and God's commands. You look at the Torah and you look at the Torah commands of a person, and that is the way to connect with God. Why? Because closest to God comes through humility, through obedience, through lowering ourselves to God. But the Torah of Moshe never commanded us to deprive ourselves, to abstain from this world. Rather, the Torah commands us to give all the portions of our body, all parts of our personality, its proper, you know, its fair share. So God gave us a body, God gave us a soul, and God gave us many different aspects and you know, and partitions within our body and soul, and every single aspect of the person needs to be nourished. We're not supposed to deprive any part of our person of what it needs. We're supposed to do within the guidelines the Torah prescribes. But it's not a religion of deprivation. He says that keeping the Shabbos, that's something which is the greatest recognition of God. And you know, we know that Shabbos is very much about the rest and physical enjoyment. And somebody who accepts the mitzvah of Shabbos and observes it properly, that person is testifying to godliness in this world. That person is connecting to God much more so than somebody who abstains and deprives himself of this world. And he says that keeping Shabbos brings you much closer to God than deprivation, and he says Nazirus, even becoming a Nazir. So that's what he tells the, again, it's a much longer conversation, I'm just quoting part of it. But that's what he tells the king of the Khuzars. That's what he tells him. Meaning that God, and I think it's an important point, that God gave us a body, God gave us a soul, and he didn't give us our body and soul in order to ignore and deprive ourselves, he gave us a body and soul in order to nourish our body and soul, and to utilize it properly. So we're supposed to utilize it based on the guidelines of the Torah and follow God's will and how to enjoy this world. But yet we're supposed to utilize our bodies and enjoy this world appropriately. That's what we're supposed to do. The Gemara records that a famous story with the great Kohen Gadol, Shimon HaTzadik, Shimon the Righteous. Shimon HaTzadik was essentially the leader of the Jews and the first Kohen Gadol, the first high priest in the beginning of the Second Temple period. And once they rebuilt the temple, after the times of Ezra, so the very first high priest was Shimon HaTzadik. And Shimon HaTzadik was somebody who never wanted to partake of the offerings of a Nazir. And why? Because he thought that, you know, the Nazir, what he's doing, he was depriving himself, he may regret what he did. You know, he wasn't comfortable partaking of his offerings. So you're supposed to, you know, the Kohen does eat the offerings of the Nazir, but he didn't want to do it himself. But one time he said, I'm willing to partake of a certain Nazir's offering. What was it? There was a certain Nazir. And I'm going to copy the story. A certain Nazir who came to the temple, and he said to him, you know, he had his hair all grown out, and he said to him, you know, your hair is so beautiful. He had these like long curly locks, and he said, you know, why would you want to become a Nazir and have to shave all your hair off? So this Nazir told him a story. He said, one time I was walking outside, and I was right near a pond, and I looked at my reflection in the pond, and I started, you know, kind of gazing at my beautiful hair. And I was like stroking my hair and trying to feel how beautiful I was, how handsome I was. And at that point, he caught himself, and he said, "Una, what are you doing? You know, the arrogance, you know, the superficiality of it." And he said that he told himself, "I'm going to shave all this hair off for the sake of God," because he got carried away with his ego, because he had such beautiful hair. And he said, "I want to shave it off for God's sake." So Shimon HaTzadik kissed him on the head. And he said, this is the type of Nazir that the Torah is looking for. And he went ahead and he ate of the offering. So the idea being that even though we're saying that there's mixed feelings that the sages have towards becoming a Nazir, you know, deprivation, abstention is not something which is necessarily promoted by the Torah. But yeah, with the right goals in mind, it's a very, very powerful thing. If somebody does feel that their egos, is overtaking them, somebody feels they've become so entrenched in physicality, materialism, they just can't control themselves anymore. So to be able to step out of that and say that I'm going to, for the sake of God, become a Nazir in order to, as a training exercise, to put my ego at rest, or to help myself have self-control, well, that's the place where Nazir is supposed to enter in to Jewish ideals. And that's the place where it's appropriate to become a Nazir. So Shimon HaTzadik gave him a kiss on his head and said, this is the type of Nazir I'm looking for. That's what he told him. So for us, I mean, none of us should become Nazirs. I mean, it's not something we should do. But it's the concept. The concept of Nazir is something which is important. That when we do find in our lives, we're becoming a little bit too arrogant. We find our lives, we're not using our brains enough. And we're becoming a little bit too much involved in habits. We find our lives a little bit too much involved in materialism and superficiality and externals. So to take steps, I mean, I wouldn't say to take these official steps of being a Nazir. That's something which is too much of a commitment for us to take. But to take steps that are concrete in our lives in order to train ourselves to grow and become different is a very, very important thing. The idea of a sota, which we spoke of last week, stands in opposition to a nazir. Sota is somebody who cannot control herself. She became so caught up in physical lusts and desires that she destroyed her life and her husband's life, and this other guy's life as well. The Nazir is somebody who, before he falls into that trap, is able to stop himself and say, I need to do something to change. That's what the Nazir does. There's one other interesting point that comes up concerning a Nazir, which is that the sages use the Nazir as an example of what to do when there's things around us that are dangerous to our spiritual health. Meaning that whenever the Talmud tries to tell you, stay away from that thing, it's dangerous for you, so it always uses the analogy of that we tell the Nazir, don't even walk through the vineyard. The Nazir can't eat grapes, he can't have wine. So for him to walk through the vineyard is a very dangerous thing, because, you know, maybe he'll be tempted and he'll pop a grape in his mouth. So we tell the Nazir, go around the vineyard, don't go through the vineyard, go around the vineyard. That's always the analogy that the rabbis give when it comes to, you know, trying to build some sort of protection or fence around the spiritual dangers, a mitzvah which one is likely to fail at. The Nazir can't even eat raisins. So like similar, you know, like a recovering alcoholic. So not only will they not sip any alcohol, but they'll avoid any parties with drinking involved because they know the temptation is just too powerful for them. So Nazir is an example given to us that we have to be very aware of our temptations. And if we know there's something out there which might draw us back into old habits or might tempt us to do something that's unhealthy for us, whether it be physically or spiritually, not only should we just tell ourselves, I'm not going to do it, but we should try to set up the proper framework and fences around so that we don't fall into that trap. So the Nazir, he'll say, yeah, don't worry, I can walk through the vineyard, I'm not going to have any grapes. We tell him, no, go around the vineyard. Don't walk through the vineyard, it's too risky. So we have to all take that lesson as well. Again, like the recovering alcoholic, that, you know, it's very risky. You know, if something is there which is going to be dangerous for us or tempting for us, why subject ourselves to the challenge? We should make sure that we set up the proper framework which we can kind of circumvent the issue and not have to deal with the challenges which are there. So the Nazir goes around the vineyard, and we should also make sure in our lives that whatever challenge we deal with, there are people, you know, people who are trying to diet. So if you keep cake in the house, not a very wise thing to do, you know? Everyone can relate to that one. They'll say, no, I'll put it in the freezer, I'll take it out for Shabbos, and when a friend comes over, no, you'll find some munching on it later in the day, you know? You keep the cake out of the house, you know? That's what you have to do. So that's what it's like in all areas of life. It's something which we're trying to work on, and it's tempting. We should go around the vineyard. Don't go through the vineyard, go around the vineyard. That's the advice the sages give. The Rambam, Maimonides, he says that a Nazir is actually equated to a prophet. He quotes a verse from the prophets that actually groups them together, a Nazir and a prophet. And the idea is the ability to remove ourselves from this world and draw our excitement and our vitality from spirituality from God. That's something which a prophet was able to do. A prophet was able to be elevated beyond this world and that they drew from God. And a Nazir is supposed to be somebody also who is striving towards those heights. And the ultimate goal is that really our focus and our energy and our source of meaning in life, you know, our vitality in life, our pleasure in life, should not be drawn from physicality and materialism. It should be drawn from spirituality. Again, within the realm of the physical world, with caring for our bodies and with enjoying God's gifts. But ultimately, what should drive us, what should motivate us? So the Nazir is trying to show us that what should motivate us ultimately should be our connection with God and nothing of the physical world. So this is the idea of being a Nazir, and this is when why I want to be a Nazir? This is the sages have mixed feelings towards this, based on the fact that it does involve deprivation, and we're supposed to enjoy this world, but ultimately it should be used as a tool in order to become a better person. Yeah?
Such an idea.